Trans Resistor Radio.
You are listening to Trans Resistor Radio. I am your host, Aaron Franz. My website is ageoftransitions.com. Please go to the website to subscribe to this podcast. I have an RSS feed. You can subscribe through iTunes. You can use Stitcher Radio for mobile devices. And you can also just download every episode directly at ageoftransitions.com. So thank you very much for listening, and please stay tuned because there will be a new episode of Trans Resistor Radio every Tuesday or Wednesday. I will post it to the feed here. And for those of you who may watch the YouTube versions of Trans Resistor Radio, I just wanted to let you know that I am not making a YouTube version of every single podcast. I'm making one podcast a week, but I'm not always making YouTube versions of the podcast now. So be sure to subscribe to the feed at the website to hear the audio-only versions of the podcast if perhaps you've missed the last two because there haven't been YouTube videos. I just wanted to let you know that. And I also wanted to encourage people who may want to make their own YouTube versions of those podcasts, the ones that I haven't posted to YouTube. If you take the audio file and you just make a YouTube video yourself, send it my way, and then I'll post that, your version of the YouTube video, on ageoftransitions.com and also in the playlist for Trans Resistor Radio at YouTube. So thank you very much for simply listening and for helping me out with making the videos too, if you choose to do so. I want to thank you for doing that. Today on Trans Resistor Radio, I interview Piers Redmond of PorkinsPolicyReview.wordpress.com. Piers is a specialist in foreign policy, is what his main focus is at his website. So in this interview, I speak with him broadly about American foreign policy and about many news stories in that regard as of late. Piers wanted to let me know that there is a point in the interview in which he mentions the Kony 2012, the NGO involved with that, and he said that it was the Enough Project, but he actually meant that it was Invisible Children, and that the Enough Project is actually run by John Prendergast, who is friends with George Clooney. So he just wanted to let me know. That's just a little correction, so that you do know. You know, it's easy to mix things up when you're speaking here on the air. And yes, I do realize that this isn't actually radio, so the name Trans Resistor Radio is a bit off. And you know, we're not on the air as people are when they record live radio. But regardless, you know what I mean. So, with that said, I will begin the interview now. It's on with the show. I hope you enjoy this episode of Trans Resistor Radio. Today on the show, I welcome Piers Redmond of PorkinsPolicyReview.wordpress.com. Welcome to the show, Piers.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for having me on the show. It's a real pleasure and an honor to talk with you on your show this time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. We're going to talk about foreign policy, American foreign policy in general, and recent current events. But before we even get into that, I kind of want to ask you, since I have the opportunity here, what's the story behind Porkins Policy Review and Radio, the name? How do you come up with deciding to go with Porkins?
Well, he is a obscure character in the New Hope, the first Star Wars movie, and he is a sort of a portly fellow who pilots an X-wing, and he has the distinction of being the first person to die attacking the Death Star. So I'm sure, as your listeners can tell, I'm a pretty big science fiction fan, a very big Star Wars fan, and I just always thought this guy was really funny, and I used that name for everything from this to, you know, when I post things online on forums and, you know, video games and things like that. When I was coming up with an idea for the website name, I tossed around some pretty awful ones. And you know, just sort of like lame conspiracy-esque type things. And that just seemed kind of stupid. And I kind of wanted to make it a little bit more personal. And I just went with, I thought, well, Porkins, that's great. And then Policy Review just sounded kind of fancier than a pretty simple website that I had. So I thought that that would work. And PPR sounds good, no matter how you...
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I definitely remember it. I love it. I love that illustration. And everybody loves a martyr.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. My sister did the drawing of that, and she does some other drawings for the website as well.
Yeah, yeah. The drawings are great. Yeah, she did a great job. Okay, so with that out of the way, let's get into the meat and potatoes here with American foreign policy, always a mystery to those who actually take the time to try to figure out what's actually going on with it. We get all sorts of cover stories all the time, but getting into the nitty-gritty is difficult. And you do a great job on your website and your podcast dissecting all sorts of various stories. So I really recommend listeners check out your website if they have not done so and listen to the podcast because they're good. And to start out here, let's get into current events with Ukraine. What is your take on what's happening in that area?
Well, I mean, I guess the sort of obvious take is that this is just the continuance of the further encircling of Russia by NATO, but mostly by the United States. And this has been going on for quite a while now. We have NATO gobbling up all of the former Soviet Eastern Bloc countries like Poland and Lithuania and Estonia and whatnot, and pointing all sorts of terrifying missiles at Russia. But I think a little bit beyond this is the kind of unveiling of the next phase of the American empire. And I see the Russia-Ukraine as the kind of the next step in this. And what I mean by that is that we're seeing a kind of we're pushing back from this whole Al-Qaeda threat. And we see that we're sort of tying up the loose ends with the 9/11 trial. And Al-Qaeda somehow has shifted into the background, and the real threat is Russia. Oh, my God, Russia. And, of course, Al-Qaeda was always just a kind of a proxy to attack nations like Russia and China and whatnot. But I see this as entering into a new phase whereby Al-Qaeda is not a threat anymore. The real threat is Russia. And we see America kind of loving Al-Qaeda in Libya and Syria. And this is just this new thing. And again, we see this fear-mongering about Russia as this global empire. Of course, we never really seem to – or many people don't seem to see America as a global empire. But this is, I think, the kind of the next phase in the empire where we're going to kind of go at Russia in a more overt sort of sense and not use groups – like Al-Qaeda or the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and we're seeing a much more formalized fight going on between these two nations, which is very disconcerting.
Yeah, it's not the covert CIA operations anymore. This is actual build-up to war, quite possibly. Do you think that is something that's perhaps desired by NATO and America?
Certainly, I think not like right away. I think that this is something that they're going to have to plan a little bit more, but this is something that has always been in the background. Obviously, NATO's whole function is to confront Russia. You know, back in when it was first formed, of course, this was the Soviet Union and the threat was communism. But again, that, like the terrorism myth, is just a facade. I mean, this was never really about communism. This was really just about facing off against a pretty independent actor on the global stage, being Russia. And I do think that war in some capacity will probably happen. I don't know really when, and I don't know in what form that might take. But certainly, I mean, the rhetoric that is coming out of American officials as well as Russian officials, I mean, is pretty serious. And they're not really joking about any of this. Mm-hmm. And certainly there is fighting going on in Ukraine. And this is something that we do need to take notice of. And We've already kind of started the prelude to this with the sort of sanctions, even though those aren't really affecting Russia very directly right now.
Yeah.
But again, this is something that's in the background, and we see this hype and this fear-mongering coming right now out of the General Philip Breedlove, who is the commander of NATO forces in Europe, and he has been out front in the past couple of days and weeks talking about how Russia is ready to invade. He made up this ridiculous story that they were going to invade this little breakaway state that is basically part of Moldova called Transnistria, which even Russia doesn't recognize. It serves no strategic value, has no resources, and nothing. But it is this weird breakaway nation that has a hammer and sickle and statues of Lenin everywhere. And this helps to illustrate this Cold War image that NATO wants to propagate.
I see. Now, you did a podcast entirely on the Sochi Olympics, which was excellent. And I know that when I was watching the Olympics, I mean, clearly I could see there's just constant propaganda flow that, like, Russia is the worst country in the world. They're evil. They're anti-gay. Mm-hmm. And they're just, like, going out of their way quite clearly to paint a bad picture of them. What's going on there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was painful to – I don't know if you watched the opening ceremony.
I missed that part.
It was probably better you missed it. But David Remnick of The New Yorker was the sort of imperial mouthpiece for that. And about every 5 minutes, he had to mention the Russian Empire and the dark history of it, never failing always to mention America.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that the Sochi Olympics was – the Olympics is always politicized, but the Sochi Olympics was definitely – brought it to a whole new level.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of this sort of long-term plan of, you know, we first have to show Russia as this, like you said, this anti-gay state that is committing all of these atrocious acts. And that kind of instills this mentality in people here that Russia is evil. And that makes it that much easier to dehumanize the Russian people and to make all of them look like gay bashing, psychos.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it was just so clear to me that was just propaganda. It was very disturbing because I think that probably more than anything else was a moment for me personally that I realized, like, okay, this whole Russian antagonism conflict with Russia is a real oncoming thing. I mean, this is something that we had to look out for because I could just see through that nonsense right away. But on the other side of the coin, what might Russia be doing that we need to look out for? Like, because certainly they're no angels either. What's going on over there that we should look at too?
Yeah, I think that's probably the most important thing that the alt media is saying on this. And they tend to paint Putin as a statesman, and they tend to paint him as some sort of person who is up there defending against the evil imperial West.
Yeah.
And Putin, of course, likes these kind of confrontations, or at least that's my take on this, because this ultimately allows him the excuse to ramp up their own war on terror, particularly in Chechnya, but elsewhere in Russia. And, you know, this is just basically giving him the excuse to further clamp down on media, civil rights, all sorts of things like that. So, you know, and we do see Russia, at the border in Ukraine. Now, how much this is really a prelude to war again, who knows? But, you know, I mean, don't kid yourself that Russia, like you said, is an angel. Mm-hmm. And, they're certainly, totally willing to go to the brink of something. I mean, they're obviously, ready to go. And I think they feel a little bit put out by some of the recent actions that America has taken, like in Libya and Syria. And, war is good for everybody if you're in power. And I don't see Russia necessarily backing away from that. But I would take notice of things, like Chechnya, where they're upping things. And as well as their sort of war against people, like political assassinations in Ukraine, and we just saw one of the major leaders of the neo-Nazi party in Ukraine, the Rights sector being assassinated, and Russian intelligence took credit for this. So again, Russia is involved in this. There are no angel, and it kind of discourages me when the alt media paints this very rosy picture of Putin, you know, as if he's, you know. So, I mean, he's just another one of these oligarchs who runs the world.
Yeah, totally. Now, I know that you wanted to mention Yugoslavia, Rwanda, Croatia, and Bosnia, Herzegovina, that whole situation. How does that tie in here?
Well, both of these, the anniversaries of which are the anniversary of the NATO war in Yugoslavia was just passed, which is March 24th. And the anniversary of the Rwandan genocide is coming up April 7th. But I think that both of these are very integral to understanding the mindset of American foreign policy as it exists now. So with Yugoslavia, this has been the sort of template for future NATO-led wars. They use the same tactics there, and they have perfected them now. But, you know, in Yugoslavia, we see the bombing of things like hospitals and factories, schools. This is a common NATO practice now. We saw that in Libya. And again, also encouraging separatist movements, which is essentially what the U.S. and Germany did in Yugoslavia. And this is something that we see again and again throughout the world. And more importantly, and to the point, Yugoslavia was, you know, very much reliant on both the drug trade and Islamic terrorism. And this is something that the U.S. just absolutely loves, from Afghanistan to in Yugoslavia. I mean, Kosovo itself is a narco state as it exists today, and is run by a clique of mafioso who make their money on drugs, arms, and human organs, if you can believe that. But, you know, and a lot of this is, you know, Yugoslavia was predicated on mostly propaganda and media disinformation. And they're, you know, we're taught here in school to hate Serbians and to hate Milosevic. And, you know, he is seen as this, you know, this monster. And no doubt he did horrible things. Mm-hmm. But his initial plan was not to fracture Yugoslavia, but was just to protect the ethnic Serbians there. And he essentially wanted to keep Yugoslavia as a whole country. And this was, of course, antithetical to the United States' plans there. Yeah. And, you know, and again, we see the same sort of characters popping up in Yugoslavia that we see later on, like Madeleine Albright, who is, you know, again, we'll just go on and on to whomever wants to listen to her about Ukraine and Crimea. So, and that, of course, George Soros was very deeply involved in Yugoslavia in funding various groups. And again, his fingerprints are all over Ukraine right now. And Rwanda is probably, you know, we could do a whole 2-hour long conversation and barely scratch the surface of Rwanda. Yeah. But Rwanda is something that is to this day is not understood whatsoever by most people. Like, you know, from the sort of theory or the official narrative that the genocide was organized from the beginning by extremist Hutus and the government. Even the figures on how many people died are probably inflated. And this led to the rise to power of one of the nastiest dictators in Africa, Paul Kagame, who has never been held accountable. I mean, he has a whole fleet of agents that go around the world basically arresting people who question his story of the genocide. And this led to the consolidation of Western power in Central Africa. Mm-hmm. And the violence in Rwanda, the genocide there, just pales in comparison to the genocide that happened in Congo, which was a direct result and was ultimately orchestrated by the UK and America. And we're talking in Congo, close to 6 million people have been brutally murdered. And again, Congo and Rwanda and what happened there is again the sort of general template that America uses, creating interethnic violence, funding rebel groups, and putting puppets in place that ultimately are beholden to, you know, the big banks and Western corporations and the governments of the West, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what they love is these ethnic tensions. Mm. That's perfect for them to go in there with the CIA and go fan the flames on both sides and then just take over on both sides. And also the whole drug trade. It's crazy how the most illicit trades in the world are actually they're taken advantage of by our intelligence and by our foreign policy for our own advantage. Is that not the case?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, if you're gonna do nasty covert things, you need a covert way of making money.
Yeah.
And things like drugs and diamonds and arms are the best way to do that because, you know, no one's really looking there.
Yeah.
And since they're illegal, they make a shit ton of money for whoever is in charge of that.
Yeah.
And just to just a little bit more on that is just that both of Yugoslavia and Rwanda, Congo, is the way that they completely change the narrative into this they portray both of those people, and they do this constantly, as sort of backwards and primitive.
Mm-hmm.
And when people conjure up images of Rwanda or Congo, they see this violent nation that's filled with men who just love to rape and chop up people's bodies, the same way that Serbs and the other groups that we don't like in the former Yugoslavia are seen as monsters. And this is, again, part of this whole propaganda. And that's what we see, again, in Ukraine, where we have the wonderful, moderate, democracy-loving people who are infested with neo-Nazi parties, and you know, versus the brutal, nasty Russians who only like Russians. You know, they hate everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, Africa especially. I think if we're talking about confusion in the American public's mind, the entire continent of Africa is probably. I might rate that number one on the geopolitical scale. We have no idea what's been going on there for the past 100 years. I mean, I guess in a nutshell, what do you think has happened, or where are we at today with Africa? What's going on there?
I think, yeah, to looking into the future, Africa is definitely going to be the new playground for, it always has been for the West, but as we see China moving in more and more and investing heavily in Africa, particularly in infrastructure, and America's response, of course, is only to provide military aid, mostly in the form of bases and military training and kickbacks for the military governments. But yeah, I mean, and I'm saying we, and I don't really mean me and you.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, the American state has continually made sure that Africa will never get off of its feet. And we achieve this essentially by employing the use of these horrific dictators throughout the continent, rather. And we're seeing that this is becoming more and more apparent as we start knocking off most of the remaining independent leaders in Africa. So we had Gaddafi in Libya. We had Ouattara in the Ivory Coast. We're still looking to get rid of Mugabe in Zimbabwe and install Tsvangirai, who is just a Wall Street-backed thug. That's essentially what he is. And the same is true in Rwanda. Kagame has been dictator for life. Museveni in Uganda. You know, they're all over the place. But essentially, you know, Africa is also the sort of, I mean, it's just so full of wealth and opportunity, and we've made sure that the African people themselves will never, ever benefit from this.
Yeah.
And like you said, I mean, Africa is just so misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
It's painted as, you know, this sort of broad that they're all kind of the same.
Yeah.
And clearly that's just not the case. I mean, you're talking about lots of different countries, lots of different ethnic groups.
It's huge.
And,
I mean,
yeah,
so
yeah,
big,
exactly.
Just first of all, I mean, yeah, it just goes without saying.
Yeah, and you know, much of the world's economy emanates from Africa, and particularly Central Africa, like the Congo. So you're talking about almost all electronics made because of the minerals in Congo.
That's right.
So that's from cell phones to video game systems to computers. And people don't understand, you know, it's very easy to say, oh my God, the, you know, genocide and the violence in Congo and blah, blah, blah. But people don't understand that this is all very planned and very orchestrated, from, you know, places like Rwanda, which essentially run the Congo. And of course, Rwanda is beholden to the United States and the UK to a large extent as well. Mm-hmm. And there's an African saying that, you know, the continent is a gun and Congo is the trigger. So whatever happens in the Congo will emanate out from that. And as we've seen, I mean, it's just, it's very, it can be kind of daunting and, kind of, you know, depressing, but, I think that, and I've tried to make this a point on the podcast and focusing on different African issues. But this is really something that we need to understand much more deeply. Because it you know, we see with AFRICOM, we've got bases all over Africa right now. We're flying drones. We are routinely, along with France and other European countries, overthrowing every leader that even hints at it being slightly independent of the West. And in the next couple of years, Africa, we're going to see a much more overt sort of fighting going on there. And right now, again, we're still using these like Al-Qaeda type groups like Al-Shabaab and other Islamist groups. But soon we're going to see that this is really a much more overt war between China and the United States.
Hmm. Very interesting. Yeah. That, oh yeah, I'm on ask so many different things here. I have to pick between which one. And unfortunately, I'm going to ask you about Kony 2012. What was all that nonsense? What was that?
Oh, I mean, that was the biggest scam ever, really, in terms of Africa.
Yeah.
I was just talking about this the other day.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you basically have this group called the Enough Project, which is just, you know, was basically formed by a bunch of white rich liberals in California.
Yeah.
And, you know, they you know, thought that it was their gallant duty to be the white saviors of Africa, mm-hmm. like so many people before them. And they funded this silly NGO that supposedly was helping to support victims of the LRA, which is the Lord's Resistance Army, which is run by Joseph Kony. Which started in Uganda but then moved elsewhere throughout Central Africa. And Kony has been around for a very long time, since the late 80s, but mostly throughout the 90s. And the Enough Project started this ridiculous campaign to, you know, in 2012, we're going to stop Joseph Kony.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that through armbands and posters and this silly video about him. And most of that video was totally out of date. Like, you know, they were talking about him being in Uganda. He hasn't been in Uganda in years. He's most likely in either South Sudan, which is, of course, an American colony, or he is in Central African Republic, which is, I mean, is just a lawless area that's run by the U.S. and France. Mm. And, of course, this came out, and that, along with pictures of the three idiots from the Enough Project posing with South Sudanese rebels with guns at a clandestine meeting between them and another African group. And they had this picture with like a caption about how cool they were. And this blew up in the face of the Enough Project. And as many people might know, the one of the founders of the Enough Project couldn't take it anymore, so he stripped down and masturbated in San Diego.
That's right. That's yes. What happened. I knew something ridiculous. I couldn't remember what it
was.
Yeah,
that was how he decided to, I guess, stop Kony.
Okay.
And Kony is still around. I mean, he's gone nowhere. And, you know, the closer you start to look at this, you start to see that characters like Kony and others have some sort of, you know, illicit sort of connection with various intelligence agencies in the West. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't sort of gloss over the idea that he is he's a great boogeyman to have. Mm-hmm. And he's a great, that was the beginning of the overt training of African forces by AFRICOM. And this was the pretext with which to send military trainers into Africa, was to find this guy, Kony. Mm. And now we see that this is going on all over the continent.
Mm. Now, would you classify the Kony 2012 film as propaganda, or does it not even get that distinction? Was it just some stupid project? And what do you think in that regard?
I definitely think it's very clever propaganda, particularly this new propaganda that we see popping up. You know, there was this sort of Ukrainian version of Kony with this girl, and this very slick production. It looks very good. Mm-hmm. You've got these very, you know, startling images of people being killed or attacked. And yeah, it definitely is this. I think it's part of this new breed of propaganda that is coming up, and you know, this is taking the form of, like I said, these very slick, cool looking movies. And we were talking off air, but the most recent podcast I did is all about this. And one of the chief propagandists in Libya and Syria right now, this clown called Matthew Van Dyke, who again made a very persuasive film about the Syrian rebels, and he himself calls himself a propagandist. But yeah, no, I think the Kony 2012 thing was great propaganda, because it got everybody, you know, suddenly people were like, oh my God, there are people dying in Africa. You know, there are warlords there.
Yeah.
And again, it totally skewed the image of Uganda and what Kony is really doing. And again, Kony was the darling of Museveni for a short period of time. And then he had a falling out with him. And it was also great propaganda, because suddenly when Obama announced that he was sending military advisors into Central Africa, this was seen as great, because we've got to get rid of Kony. And that sort of opened up the door for, well, we're going to send military advisors to this place and to that place. And again, South Sudan formed as a country around the same time. And, the history of South Sudan is just riddled with American intelligence agents.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, when we're talking about propaganda, I mean, this is so important to American foreign policy, because it is the method by which we're told what American foreign policy is. And nobody it takes digging to realize this fact, but it is a fact. You have to be conscious of it to understand what's even going on in the first place. But, I mean, what about that phenomenon that the public is basically confused about what we're doing with American foreign policy due to the propaganda that we're given?
Yeah, I go back and forth on this issue of war propaganda, only because – and, you know, my sort of view on this might be a little bit skewed, because I am pretty deeply involved in the alternative media, where a lot of this propaganda is exposed. But at the same time, it seems that kind of people just don't care, or they don't seem willing to accept it. And we, you know, in Ukraine right now, I mean, there is so much propaganda, be it the neo-Nazis that are in power or all of these leaked tapes where they're talking about how they're going to run the country. But speaking on a broad sense, the propaganda here in America is reaching this just incredible point where they can put out the most outrageous sort of pro-war, pro-violent imagery and movies and TV shows, and people will just readily accept that.
Yeah.
And we're reaching this stage almost where we don't view propaganda as being manufactured in a way that no longer necessarily has to take the tone that, oh, this is just and this is for a democracy. And instead it's becoming like, this is cool.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this is the new cool thing to do. And, you know, there's just like so many movies, like there's that one with Mark Wahlberg, Act of Valor, which is this just ridiculous, ridiculous movie. Okay. And we see that more and more, where it's no longer even about This is the right thing to do. It's more like this is the cool thing to do, and don't you want to be a part of this? And, you know, if you watch TV and you see those, like, Navy SEAL commercials, it's the same thing with slick music, and, you know, you're going to be going all over the world doing all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really scary because I think, unfortunately, it seems that a large section of the population is just totally blind to this idea that it's not really cool to go around the world as a global empire butchering people and enslaving them economically.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. I mean, in terms of the propaganda, it's been around for a long time now. I mean, American propaganda has been developing further and further throughout the years. And as you're saying, it's to this point where it's just reached almost madness, and where we, the public, are sort of in this mad state where we're not even judging things on moral grounds anymore. We're just, I don't even know what to say about that. What do you think, where does this come from? Do you think there's like a purpose in confusing people to this extent? Do you think there are people like, leveraging this confusion in the population purposely, and what might be going on there?
Definitely. I think this is really about, you know, many times, if not all the time, propaganda is really about getting people's attention somewhere else so that you can't really see what's going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And I think that American war propagandists in particular have become very good at doing this and very good at portraying any war or act of aggression as the right thing to do. And I think this is certainly many times being orchestrated by the elite. And I think that, but on another level, I think there are also lots of people who may essentially be good-minded people, yeah, but really do get caught up in patriotism or, yes, nationalism, you know, however you want to frame it. And they don't really mean to be doing this.
No.
You know, and at the same, and you know, on the flip side, from the mainstream, the alt media romanticizes, you know, the Freemasonic slave owning power elite who butcher people, you know, the indigenous people of America and invaded lots of other countries.
Yeah.
So, you know, they fall victim to this as well, and they don't mean, I think they mean well, but it's very, you know, you always kind of want to have something positive to go with.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what happens.
Yeah, well, everybody wants to justify their actions, and we all do bad things, and we all justify the bad things. So I think it's great that you're pointing out that most people aren't evil. They're doing things because they think, mm-hmm, it's right. And I know that I've read various industry rags of the military-industrial complex. I was fortunate enough to kind of like get a hold of these at one point. They're just, but I would read them, and you know, there'd be tons of articles just saying like, "Oh yeah, terrorism's so bad," and you know, "We're doing a good job of fighting terrorism," and this, that, and the other. It's just, you know, the same propaganda points again in the news, mm-hmm, are in this industrial magazine for the people who are, you know, going about carrying out the project. So they really believe in what they're doing, without a doubt.
Yeah, there was just a recent poll that came out today from the Kaiser Family Foundation that surveyed all of these veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. And yeah, you know, they still essentially said that yes, this was the right thing to do. This was a noble thing. They claimed, you know, that veterans saw themselves as more patriotic. And I think that obviously you can create a poll however you want. You know, you can create, yes, the results however you want.
Yeah.
But again, I think for a lot of these people, they have been indoctrinated into thinking that this is totally okay and that this is a good thing. And part of that is because if you're going to go around murdering other people, you need to somehow justify this to yourself. And if that means that you brought democracy to Afghanistan, then okay, I guess that's how you're going to go with it.
yeah, totally. Now, what about the idea of America as an empire? Because throughout history, we look at different civilizations rising up and falling. And typically, you'll see that the civilization goes through an empire phase where they try to extend their reach across the globe as far as they're able to, and they inevitably overextend themselves, and then they get taken over by some, usually a neighboring country or civilization takes over from there. Do you think that America is overextending itself? Are we putting ourselves at risk for this sort of situation to happen in the future?
I think that America is obviously overextending itself militarily. We're now virtually every country on the planet, and we spend, I mean, you know, most of our money on the military budget. On a more kind of like meta level, I think that it's almost okay because it's becoming less and less necessarily about the nation state and more about these kind of globalist entities like NATO. So even if the American empire were to kind of collapse, NATO would still exist in some capacity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think that we're clearly reaching a point that we're just not going to be able to sustain ourselves. I mean, there's only so many wars you can have going on. There's only so much money that you can throw at these useless conflicts. And obviously, you know, war is another great way to shift the public's attention away from the economy, yeah, which is, yeah, you know, again, probably near collapse. Mm-hmm. So at some point, the empire will fall upon us. You know, there's no way that it's going to last forever. That's just – it's economically not possible and historically has never really happened. At some point, the empire will fall.
Yeah.
And you know, when that happens, I don't know, and I wouldn't really speculate on that because I think that the powers that be have – they still have a few more actors that they want to get rid of, particularly Russia and China, but in a more probably realistic sense, Syria – and then possibly even Iran.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what about China? I want to ask you about this for sure. What's going on with U.S.-China tensions?
It's this, you know, kind of uneasy back and forth. We don't really see, you know, I think we're probably too dependent economically on China, yeah, to kind of overtly bash it the way we do with Russia.
Yeah.
And but although I will say this, that I mean, during an election season, and we have one coming up, it is a free for all on China. It borders on out and out racism towards the Chinese people.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, and that's liberal and conservative. I mean, they hold nothing back in bashing China.
Yeah,
and you know, I mean, they're also just regular people trying to make a living.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we definitely see China. In the South China Sea, we've got like the Senkaku Islands and a bunch of other little uninhabited island chains that probably have large deposits of oil around them. And we see China claiming the islands for themselves, Japan claiming them for themselves, which is essentially claiming them for the United States and multinational oil companies. So, you know, and there's a sort of a low intensity conflict going on with China and America. Like I said, in Africa, I think much of the geopolitical events going on in Africa really have to do more with China. Mm. And that takes the form of the Kenya Westgate attack recently. Again, China is very invested in Kenya and elsewhere. There is a low intensity conflict, and again, you know, but then on things like the TPP, you know, they're sort of willing to let China wants to be a part of it, and I think America will be fine with that. And I think that's a really important thing to remember, is even for all of the bluster between these nations, at the end of the day, they all go to the same elite gatherings.
Yeah.
They more or less agree on some sort of crazy globalist agenda.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of this is also theater and show. And, you know, when you're all going to Bilderberg or G20 or these groups, I mean, how much could you really hate the other person?
Yeah. Yeah, well, great point. I mean, this brings up the, I guess, the New World Order idea as it's sold in the alternative media often, of the end goal being this international organization, and that really across the world you have people signed up to this idea. I mean, how much, to what extent do you think this is the case? Do you think that large-scale wars are actually known about on both sides, and that the people at the top of this New World Order scheme sort of get together before the fact and say, yeah, you know, we're going to have a war at some point, and it's going to be good because it's going to help further our internationalist goals? Do you think that occurs, and to what extent?
I think it occurs on some level. I don't know how necessarily, you know, I don't know if they really call each other up and say it.
Yeah.
But certainly, I mean, we can look back again on another anniversary, World War One, and you know, there is quite a bit of evidence sort of pointing to the idea that this was sort of kind of planned, or at least in the sense that, yeah, let's all fight this big war.
Yeah.
We'll kill off a lot of the population
yeah.
that we don't really have the money to support. And, you know, it will sort of kind of be in a bit of a pickle for a little while, but then we'll kind of, you know, things will sort of even out. And then we'll go into another war again and another. And I think that this idea that history repeats itself is kind of silly, because I think people use that phrase and they use it in the sense that, oh, damn, just all those things just happened all over again and we had no idea that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I do agree that I think that there is a much more orchestration and much more planning. And of course, I mean, you know, the globalist New World Order, however you want to phrase that, they have no real problem with warfare and fighting because it makes them a lot of money. And after every one of these major conflicts, of course, we see an increase in the notion of world government, be it the UN or the International Criminal Court. And, you know, that's always just further empowers this group of elites at the very, very top. And, you know, again, like Obama doesn't really have that much say in what goes on. You know, I mean, his agenda is dictated by people way above him.
Yeah. That's what I find most incriminating myself, is that after the fact of the war, they always try to, you know, they bring out these international organizations and they try to push the globalist, just globalism in general, right after the war. It just, that to me is incredibly suspect on its own.
But, and this hand-holding between all of these people. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just so phony.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's something to think about if people are out there who might be skeptical of all this. I mean, it's just, it's worth being skeptical of the official stories in any given case, I always say. That's my point of view. And I guess I did want to mention or talk about the idea of democracy as well. So what do you think about the concept of democracy, where the entire population has a say in what happens? I mean, what if the population is so confused, as we were talking about earlier, with propaganda and whatnot? We don't really even know what's going on, first of all. And second of all, we don't really have a say either. I mean, what's your thought on the democratic view of our American foreign policy?
I think democracy can be a great scandal and a great con on a lot of people, because it instills this false sense that we actually have a voice and that we control these our elected officials, when in reality we really have no control over them. You know, we're presented with either candidate A or candidate B, and they're funded by the same exact people. They like, you know, they go to the same clubs and groups. And this idea that, like you said, I mean, we don't really have any power. I mean, the, you know, our Congress has not declared war in a very long time and probably won't. Nope. And in fact, they've done a lot of work in allowing the president to completely declare war whenever he wants to. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and furthermore, we allow groups like the UN to declare war. And while that might be kind of a nice idea in theory, again, the UN is not democratic. It's controlled by Russia, America, Britain, France, and China. You know, and then ostensibly places like Germany and whatnot. But yeah, I think that this whole, I think it's just a big con, and it's a way to kind of trick people into thinking that no matter what the decision or outcome is, it's okay because we democratically did this.
Yeah.
So, you know, even when some horrible person is elected president and they do all these awful things, you know, then it's that, well, that's democracy, you know? I mean, so you get the good with the bad.
Yeah.
And it's a very easy out, and it's like a stupid way to kind of excuse war crimes by the rich and the powerful. Mm-hmm. And then we see, of course, democracy, you know, being bandied about as the answer to all of life's problems. And we push that upon people all over the world.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, democracy is this failed sort of idea, and it's a sham to begin with. But then at the same time, we use it to leverage our foreign policy by saying that's what we're going to give to other people.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Yeah, and then, of course, we don't really give, you know, democracy to anybody.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and on a bigger note, I don't really think democracy exists in the sense that, you know, everyone gets to have a say, because that just doesn't really happen. Even on a very local level, we don't see this really happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. It's sad, but there's always ways out. I wonder, Pierce, if you have any ideas on, in the face of all this, you know, our helplessness as the average person in the face of this foreign policy going on, which we really don't have any say in, what sort of things can we do to be proactive, perhaps within foreign policy or otherwise? What sort of things can we do?
I mean, I guess, first and foremost, we really need to actually educate ourselves about the history of U.S. foreign policy and geopolitics in general. And I understand that that can be a really daunting task, and it can be a pretty unpleasant one. And, you know, and I will attest to this, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, reading about geopolitics, researching it. And you can get to this point where you're like, I just don't even want to know anymore. This is just too upsetting. But I think it really is actually important to really understand this and try our best to digest this. And that doesn't mean that you need to spend, you know, 10 hours every day reading about geopolitics online. Yeah. But, you know, you do need to actually educate yourself about the reality of what's going on. And you need to be a little bit more engaged in the conversation. But, you know, and on another level too, I think we also need to live our lives and not necessarily think that these wars and whatnot are somehow necessary to protect ourselves, because those are always going to be used as a smokescreen to take away our own rights and our own liberties here. So, you know, it's also important to live your life and to try and enjoy your life and to be a good person. And that might be, you know, kind of the best thing that you can do. I mean, the other thing too is that, you know, is just, I think talking about it openly, like we are right now, I think there's still this fear amongst a lot of people to question any of these crazy acts, and to not be afraid to be the lone voice in the room. You know, don't be afraid that if you say something, your friends are going to be upset or you're going to piss somebody off. Because I think, as we were saying before, you know, these people are good people, and they don't necessarily know any better, or they've been so brainwashed that they think that this is the only option.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to you know, educate yourself and educate the people around you.
Yeah.
And you know, and then you know, of course, there are other things you can do. You know, if you like this, then start a website or a podcast. That's essentially what I did, and you know, get out there. But yeah, I mean, the really important thing is, you know, don't drink the alternative media Kool-Aid either, because there is so much propaganda there and so much disinformation and just. Lately, there has just been a sort of lack of any investigation whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we just, it gets worse and worse.
Yeah, I mean, just eat up the newest, you know, false flag or everyone's a Zionist spy. And you're not getting anywhere with that. And, you know, the way that the mainstream media and mainstream culture is kind of tying up the loose ends with various conspiracies, the alternative media is doing the same thing in thinking that everything is fake, that everyone is a COINTELPRO agent. And unfortunately, it just shuts down the whole argument.
Yeah.
So in the face of that, you've also got to question those people, and you got to stick it to them as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you could visit my website. I talk about this stuff all the time if you're really...
Well, that's what I was going to suggest. If you want a quick and easy way to learn about what's going on with foreign policy, listen to Porkin's Policy Radio, because you do a great job at being succinct with a lot of very important topics there. So I want to commend you on that, Pierce.
But thank you so much, Aaron. That is it's just great to hear that from you.
Yeah, yeah. And... could you just tell our audience more about your website or anything else that you'd like them to see that you've done as well?
Sure. The website, as you said, is porkinspolicyreview.wordpress.com. I am in the process of making that much shorter and making the website look a little nicer. I will go there and you can find all of my writing, you know, articles, analysis that I do. You can also find all the podcasts there. You can also go to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/1138porkins. But yeah, as you said, I mean, I do most of my podcasts do focus on geopolitics. I try to branch out and do some other things here and there, but, yeah, I mean, I've got lots of stuff up there. You know, if you're really interested, you know, the farther back you go, you can see my evolution, and I definitely didn't start off, the way I am now and how I view the world.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting as well, to kind of see that progression going on.
Yeah.
You know, cause that's another thing too, you know, don't get stuck in that one mindset where, you know, you can only listen to one sort of voice, because you miss out on so much that's out there. And, I used to do that for a while until I started to question everything around me, and not in the sense that, you know, everything is fake, but,
yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that we also need to make a point to listen to those who we completely disagree with, so that we know what they're actually up to and actually investigate that the most, I think.
Mm. Yeah. And that's difficult, and it can be really annoying, and you know, you're just – sometimes you're sitting there just yelling at the TV or whatever. But yeah, no, that's really important, because again, it's so easy to just, oh, well, he's disinfo or – mm-hmm. That's just government propaganda. I don't want to listen to it. And I know you do that a lot in Revolve. I mean, you quote, I can't believe you read as much of, you know, Brzezinski or Newt Gingrich. Or it's tough.
Yeah, yeah, it can be tough wading through these things, but it's useful. And yeah, I think it's something that more people can be doing, and I'm sure that they will be. So once again, Pierce, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show, and I'm sure that we'll talk again in the future.
Oh, thank you so much, Aaron. It's just been amazing talking with you on your show.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Trans Resistor Radio. Please be sure to visit Pierce's website and listen to his podcast as well. It's a quality podcast. I'll be sure to put the links to his website and his YouTube channel and everything else at ageoftransitions.com in the show notes for this episode. Please go to my website to subscribe to Trans Resistor Radio. I hope that you will subscribe if you're not already doing so. And if you're a new listener, that's great. I hope you enjoyed this. If you did, share it with others. So my website is ageoftransitions.com. My name is Aaron Franz. And I want to tell you, as always, Seeker, seek on. Today's episode of Trans Resistor Radio was recorded on the 2nd of April, 2014.